Good evening and welcome to the Late Debate with Cormac O'Hara. Tonight, it's likely the Brexit negotiations will move on, says a Taoiseach. Does that mean the unresolved Irish border question is being deprioritised? The water services bill was passed today. Water charges by the back door, some say, or is the matter finally resolved? And was it right or wrong for an Taoiseach to wear a shamrock poppy in the Dáil? First the news with Una O'Hagan. Grubila Mahagathunagas Brigade Falja and Asher, welcome back to the Late Debate on RT Radio 1 online and shortly on RT News Now Television. Joining me in studio this evening is Niall Collins of Fianna Fáil, Breed Smith of Solidarity People Before Profit. Frank Fian is a Fine Gael senator. Dennis McShane is a former UK Labour minister and author of Brexit, No Exit, Why in the End Britain Won't Leave Europe. And Derek Mooney is a public affairs consultant and former Fianna Fáil government advisor. You can contact the programme by text on 51551. You can email latedebate at rte.ie and you can follow and engage on Twitter at latedebaterte. Well, the Taoiseach said in the Dáil today he believes it's likely that European Union leaders will give the go-ahead for Brexit talks to proceed to the next phase at their next meeting in December. This would be a monumental shift, as the European Union has refused time and again to discuss the new trade relationship with London until the Irish border issue, the divorce bill and citizens' rights were fully addressed first and foremost. Niall Collins of Fianna Fáil, does this mean that the unresolved border question, the Irish question, is that being deprioritised now if the talks move on?
Well, certainly it's a change of position, as articulated by Leo Varadkar, and I think it's something which is very, very worrying. So much of, and you know, it has been rehearsed in every public forum, every media debate, every television forum that discusses Brexit, that the whole issue of the border is so important to us in terms of our trading relationship with the UK, and so much of our trade and our employment, our manufacturing based employment, our food processing industries are reliant on trade with the UK, that any form of a border which deviates from what we currently have will put logistically so much imposition on our exporters, that it's of such a seriousness that it had to be prioritised.
And that was a promise time and again from the government, from Fianna Fáil as well, from everybody in the Dáil, and from our European partners right across the 27, that this was a priority and it would be resolved first.
Absolutely.
Now we're moving on. Is this, Dennis McShane, a huge victory then for London?
No, on the contrary. I think all that, as I understand it, and I really can't talk about Irish politics, is that nobody here wants to sort of say we're going to block everything. In essence, until Mrs. May, the British Prime Minister, the British government, say we are giving up the idea we're going to leave the customs union, which I think in due course we will, there's an Irish problem. You can't leave the customs union and not reimpose customs checks on the Irish border. So I think this is in the famous expression, kicking the can a little bit down the road.
Solutions whatsoever being put forward by any side, realistic solutions to sort the problem. If you keep kicking the can, would you accept this down the road? By 2019, you will still have to kick the can down the road and you'll be met with a border on the island of Ireland again.
It won't be 2019. It all has to end this time next year, October next year. It's all got to be over. Things are accelerating very, very fast. Mrs. May is a prisoner of the hardline Brexit fanatics, the League of Brexit Loyalists in her party. She's just lost one of them, Mrs. Priti Patel, in the British cabinet, as you may have picked up. I think what the Taoiseach's done very sensibly is to say Ireland isn't going to interfere massively in this, but everybody in Europe, I think, accepts, I spend most of my time in other EU capitals, that Britain can't have a relationship unless it accepts there's no hard border between the six counties in Ireland.
Is this not, Frank Fian, the beginning of a nightmare, the nightmare unfolding for Ireland, the beginning of a hard border being reinserted on the island of Ireland? Because we were supposed to prioritise and solve this first. We're moving on and it hasn't been solved.
Well, where we're coming from, the British people, and I told them on numerous occasions, they voted, they shot themselves in our foot. And they voted for Brexit on a lot of issues, but they never thought about the Good Friday Agreement or the border in Ireland. And the border, effectively, will be an Achilles heel in Brexit for the UK, for Ireland, for Europe. It's as simple as that.
Why move on from it then?
Well, we're not moving on for it.
The Taoiseach said it's likely that European leaders will give the go-ahead for Brexit talks to proceed to the next phase. That's moving on.
Not at all. There's a game going on here. We met Boris Johnson last Monday. I had a team of Rockless members with Boris Johnson on Monday night. It's quite obvious that there's still a game going on between Britain and the 27 countries, and we're not going to get caught up in it.
What's the game?
Well, I think the check effectively that has to be paid to the EU for commitments. Also, the fact is that negotiations, I'm not sure, are going Britain's way or the United Kingdom's way, and they're hoping to get to stage two without any conditions, and that's simply not going to happen.
And nothing resolved in terms of the divorce bill, nothing resolved in terms of the border. We're on hiding. We are actually, more than the UK, are on hiding to nothing here. Isn't that right, Pete Smith?
I don't agree with you, Cormac. I think Britain's misfortunes could be to our benefit. I had an interesting conversation tonight with one of the delegates that was met Boris Johnson that you've just referred to. And apparently, and I didn't realise that this is how the figures crunched, about 11% of the British Parliament are hard Brexiteers. About 25% are for a complete break or are Brexiteers, and 11% are hard Brexiteers, and more than 70% are Remain, you know, in their sentiment. So however I might feel about the European Union, it's financial terrorism that has wreaked on the people of this country and the people of Greece. Despite the fact that the people of Britain voted to leave, we are in a strong position to argue for no border in this country.
Also, explain that to me.
We're in a very strong position because only 11% of the British parliamentarians are for a hard Brexit. And we can use that to our advantage. We can also use to our advantage the fact that Theresa May's government's up in a heap between the sex scandals and the...
Our European partners will not allow free movement and free trade across an Irish border into the European Union.
Not all of our European partners have said that. That is not true. Not all of our European partners have said that. And I think we're in a strong position now to use the weakness at the heart of Theresa May's government.
As partners within the European Union, you'll say we'll allow them to leave the European Union, leave the club and still trade and move across the border, no problem.
It's not a question of what we allow. If they're going to leave, and this is apparently what Boris Johnson told the delegation, we're going, end of story. But they have a weakness at the heart of their own system. And not least of that is the chaos in Theresa May's government. There's also the fact that only 11% of the entire Parliament are pro-hard Brexit. What this government needs to do is to indicate to them very clearly, we will not have any hand part or act in implementing a hard border. We will not provide you with Gardaí or customs checkpoints or any of the civil servants or facilities that will allow you to implement
Surely
a hard border. If you want the hard border, then you implement it. The Irish state, if they believe their own rhetoric, should say, we're not
implementing it. Dennis McShane is shaking his head. Why?
Well, very simply, if Britain leaves the customs union, which I don't think it will in the initial period, there's a lot of rhetoric here. I don't quite go with the line there's only 11% interested in Brexit. If that were true, we wouldn't have had the vote and we wouldn't
hard
be where
Brexiteers,
we are.
Hard Brexit, soft Brexit.
Hard pregnant,
soft pregnant. You're pregnant or you're not. There's Brexit or there isn't. And I don't think, however, that in about 6-9 months' time, Britain and the Conservative Party, that doesn't believe in anything, it doesn't believe in Theresa May, but it does believe in economic access, economic common sense, it won't want to amputate itself from the world's biggest market. Therefore, there will be some arrangement.
That's what the people voted for, Dennis, though.
No, they didn't. They voted to leave the European Union. It is perfectly possible to leave the European Union, to leave the treaty. That is to say, we quit the treaty, return all power to the House of Commons. We don't have any commissioners, MEPs, and the rest of it. Everything else, trade, Freedom of movement, single market.
No, that isn't what they were promised.
No, they weren't. No, I'm sorry. No,
power would return to the to Westminster.
Yes, to the Westminster.
Power would return to the UK
core.
And trade would be absolutely within the gift of European or United Kingdom authority.
Forgive me. I took a huge part in it. I read a big book about it saying Brexit would happen.
Two books.
Three books, actually, altogether.
You have to concede that for your own books.
No, no.
And the fact is, on the ballot paper, it just said you want to leave the European Union. We can. I don't want it to happen. I'd love it to be reversed. We can leave the EU treaty and still stay economically, customs union, single market, freedom movement connected. Like Norway, they're not in the EU treaty.
But that is an establishment trick of the loop.
It isn't at all.
That the people surely will be inflamed by. Niall Collins' party did in government in Lisbon and Nice. Well, when we voted twice. People were outraged, weren't they?
Well, they were outraged.
You need to go back to the... If you're going to compare Nice and Lisbon, have a look at the turnouts. In Nice and Lisbon, their turnouts were only 30-something percent. By the time we rerun it, it was up to 50-odd percent. So if people were outraged, they came out on the other side with the outrage. So that argument doesn't...
Cormac, you're still in the EU, which isn't necessarily the worst thing. And I argue, I may be wrong, that the British people, the Conservative Party, because they're the only party that counts at the moment, they're the ones in charge. There are hard Brexit ideologues there, we know that, but not quite 11%, forgive me. But
you
can do number crunching until you're blue in the face. But in my personal political judgment, as MP for 20 years, I know a lot of Tory MPs. Most of them would love to find a deal that says we've left the treaty, like Switzerland, like Norway. We're not part of the EU. The House of Commons takes decisions, not any other authority over the British people. And our decisions will be we keep trading, we're intelligent, we maintain the warm relationship we have with Ireland, we don't seek to have borders. Right now, that can't be said.
But no, you are guessing. Surely you are guessing there, or interpreting at least, what people said in the referendum. Mm-hmm. People were told various things, and by pro-Brexit people, they were told that power would return to the UK
and
Parliament,
it will.
The UK court,
it will.
Cut European Union red tape in terms of
trade.
Hang on a second.
It 37% of the total British electorate voted for Brexit. They were told that if you leave the European Union, the House of Commons will be supreme. It will be. They're also told there'll be less bureaucracy. Now we're hiring thousands of extra bureaucrats, potentially, to manage customs, to manage immigration. This is a bonanza for state bureaucracy. The state becomes bigger and bigger and bigger as a result of this vote, if there's a hard, pure Brexit.
But hang on. How dangerous will it be, Derek, in your opinion, if the establishment, as they are perceived to be in Parliament, go and do not implement the wishes of the majority?
First and foremost, if you look at the British system, it's a parliamentary system, and they've now suddenly gone for referendums, and that's kind of doesn't sit easily with the system where you're at, but the current government is ruling with 30-something percent with votes, etc. So this isn't unheard of. I think the difficulty with it is that what you have is, why did people vote for Brexit? Number one, it's a kick over the table. It's a shot across the bows of the system, of the establishment, saying, look, we're not happy the way things have been run. We're not happy with the setup here. We're not happy with communities being ignored. We're not happy with communities being left behind. We're not happy with globalisation. We're not happy with immigration. There's a whole range of things. There isn't just one. If the one that Boris Johnson and Michael Gove identified was 350 million for the NHS on the side of a bus, well, that's never going to happen either. Are the 51% going to feel let down by that? So that there is that it's how can you make this work? How can you make this in a situation where people can go about their day-to-day lives in reasonable peace and calm and certainty? How do they know that their kids are going to have an education? How do they know that they're going to have a job? How do they know that there's certainty in life? That's the way they do it.
One way is a fudge, isn't that right? Simon Coveney, the Minister for Foreign Affairs, was talking yesterday. He said, look, let's have a transition period of 5 years.
Yeah.
That's the beginning of a fudge, isn't it?
So
political advisor. You know all of that.
So what if it's like the people want something that works? They're not the people who vote in these are not ideologues. The ideologues are not 11%. They're not 1%. They're not 0.5%.
But the people who hold power get real, in the Tory party here, the likes of John Redwood, now
John Redwood no more holds power in the Tory party than I hold power in Fianna Fáil.
As much as the DUP does, he does.
The DUP far more so hold power than John Redwood does.
And they want out. They say.
Well, they want out. They want out. Except the fishermen don't want out because they want to be able to access the markets. The farmers, particularly in this island, on both sides of the border, do not want out. And that includes unionist farmers who voted for Brexit, mm-hmm. securing the knowledge that it would never happen. If people have been lied to all over the place, and it isn't just the Remainers who have lied to them, that the Brexiteers in particular into a band plane have lied to them. And farmers in the north have been told, you can leave, there'll be no cost, there'll be no difficulty, you can seek selling your milk to the co-ops in Monaghan, etc. And that's just untrue.
Redwood and Boris Johnson and Rees Mogg and outside the party, Nigel Farage, they were absolutely enraged when the transition period was mooted anyway.
They were also enraged when it happened. I mean, how many people... Boris Johnson never believed Brexit was going to happen. This is a political game.
John Redwood is to British politics what John Redmond is to Irish politics. I mean, he's not just yesterday's man, he's forgotten man. Nigel Farage's party got 1.8% in the last election in June. He is irrelevant.
Because his goals were achieved, he thought.
In the sense that we voted last year, June, to leave the EU. Nobody said on what terms or what conditions. Mm. People spluttered all over the place, that's for sure. Farage is irrelevant. Redwood's irrelevant. What matters now is certainly Mrs. May and her cabinet. And I don't know what's going on inside their little heads.
Nobody does.
Asking the Conservative Party, which for 300 years, and Ireland should know what the Conservative Party means, it's been running Britain one way or another. It's a mature party. It doesn't do mad ideology, to sign in to the Economic Dignitas Clinic in somewhere in Zurich and commit economic suicide for Britain. I sincerely believe, I may be wrong, maybe they're nutters. I don't think the Conservative Party, the bulk of them, are ready to destroy the British economy just for the sake of pleasing Nigel Farage.
This goes back. Some people on the pro-Brexit side would say to Tony Blair, spin. And you were part of his team.
Yes.
And Tony Blair, immediately when the result was announced, almost immediately started to spin it and said, look, the British electorate didn't know what they're voting for. Don't discount a second referendum. Let's vote again on this.
I'm not close to Tony. I don't think Tony called for a second referendum. I think calling for a second referendum, you've had them in Ireland, mm-hmm. and it's worked. My view is to call for a second referendum now is silly. In Switzerland, a country I lived in for 15 years, they had a referendum in February 2014 to ban free movement, stop immigration. They binned it. The parliaments binned it because they realised it was nuts. But you have to give a bit of time for that realisation to sink in.
A bit of time
in.
To ignore the people.
Well, ignore the people.
That's how it's going to be perceived.
For heaven's sake, that's like saying you vote a referendum once, one vote, one time forever. That's Robert Mugabe politics. In a democracy, as David Davis says, a democracy that can't change its mind ceases.
Put it to the people again.
Well, in due course, in elections, in votes, we'll be discussing, we'll be putting it to the people.
No, that is not the same thing.
No, I'm sorry, I'm terribly sorry. You don't actually insult the people by saying, yes, you respect their decision, but you politely say, like when you vote Labour, you vote Conservative government in, okay, we respect that. We live with the democratic decision. We don't walk away and say, that's it forever. We have a discussion and a debate. And what's missing in this debate, if I may, as it's an Irish programme, is Irish business people, Irish business leaders in Britain need to get off the potty, from under the duvet, and explain to the British people what a total comprehensive disaster the hard Brexit will be for the people of the nation of Ireland. Nobody from Ireland has said that en clair, as they say in France.
They said it during the campaign. Yeah. They tried,
but in the campaign, honestly, forgive me, we're now having the debate and the facts we should have had in the campaign. Yeah.
But we hit the perfect storm. You had the Tory party watching out for the UKIP flank, and you had the leader of the Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, was anti-Europe. And now it's quite obvious talking to Emily Thornberry, the Shadow Foreign Secretary for Labour, that Labour MPs, although they want to vote to have another referendum, they simply will not go against the will of the people. So maybe the next referendum could be the next general election.
But it's quite possible, Frank, that you'll have a general election sometime soon in the UK, because the government is just spinning out of control, and we've seen the events of resignation.
And I think Cormac is right, the transition.
And part of the next general election campaign in the UK quite likely will be
Brexit,
a rerun of the referendum. What will the exit package be? But what will the cost be?
There's only one party that are saying they'll go for a referendum or for an election. And that's the Lib Dems.
At the moment.
But Labour at the moment.
Look at me, he's laughing at the prospect of a second referendum. Well,
what I'm saying is, based on talking to lots of Labour MPs at the Brighton Labour conference recently, Conservative MPs last week at a big conference, there is no one I can meet who's a member of Parliament who is ready to collapse the government and thinks in serious terms there'll be a vote of confidence that will force a new early general election. Many people in my side of politics would like to see the referendum reverse, but it's about timing. Urging it now is just not going to work.
But they're not always in control of their own timing. They're not in control of the crisis.
The Mother event may trigger a general election.
In the end,
in Britain, we had minority governments 92 to 97, 74 to 79. Under our system, good or bad, they can stagger on, and I can't meet a single MP.
Have any of those minority governments experienced a prime minister with such poor judgment? I mean, if you look at Theresa May's stewardship since she took over, you know, it has been one bad decision after next. She had a majority of 40, decided to go for a general election to increase her mandate, got absolutely whacked, showed the incredibly poor judgment of going for a 7-week campaign rather than a fancied herself
against Corbyn. That's not a problem.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I mean, she misjudged herself, obviously, big time.
Here's a key question. She fancied herself, some would say, an establishment candidate, fancied herself against Corbyn, who is anti-establishment. And why do you think Corbyn succeeded to the extent that he did? It is possibly because, Dennis McShane, of your attitude. Let me put this.
Wrote two books and you're getting loud.
Let me put this.
You didn't plug the titles of your books yet.
Oh, can I mention?
Well, let me. Your books. The titles of your books were Brexit: How Britain Will Leave Europe, and afterwards Brexit: No Exit. Why, in the end, Britain won't leave.
Thanks,
Europe.
Thanks, Cormac. Now blame me for the election result. I love this. Keep going.
Let me flesh out the question. Jeremy Corbyn is seen as an anti-establishment leader. Now, what you were doing, and his support rose in the election because people said, look, he's anti-establishment. He's not one of them. He wants to cut charges on austerity. He wants to give us free education and a better health service and so on.
For the many, not the few, was the slogan.
Some people who were suffering in Britain at the moment will have looked at the MP's expenses scandal. We'll look at food banks versus executive pay. We'll look at Paradise Papers now and tax avoidance against the austerity that they have inflicted upon them. And they will say the establishment does not talk for us.
Sure.
And if you ignore a referendum result again, won't that inflame them further?
One of the reasons that Jeremy got a huge surge in votes from young people who crawled onto the electoral register because they weren't on it in June 2016 was to vote to punish Theresa May for her hard Brexit line.
Correct.
Not the only reason. I mean, Jeremy rightly, wonderfully won, as Bernie Sanders didn't quite in America, and Jean-Luc Mélenchon didn't quite in France, and Podemos didn't quite in Spain, because there's a lot of anger. And that language that he expresses corresponds to and anger around the world about austerity and fairness, but don't mix it up with Brexit.
No, it's
the Labour Party. The Labour Party was the anti-Brexit party.
Isn't it connected? It's the aloof attitude of people who feel they can ignore the people. That's exactly what you're proposing.
But the connection is that the people who voted for Brexit felt disenfranchised by the British system. The working class voters all over North England who felt we're completely ignored by this system, we're left to languish, there's no industry, the mines closed, the industry closed, and we're just thrown on the scrap heap. And they saw their opportunity to punish the establishment by voting for Brexit, and the same people voted for Corbyn in huge numbers.
There's another point within that. The increase in turnout for young voters between 2015 and 2017 is 19%. 19% extra new first-time voters up to the age of 29, most of whom are pro Remain. So if you're looking where the trend is, the demographic trend is for young people who say that an older generation has robbed them of their entitlement of European citizenship, have robbed them of their entitlement to move across Europe, to be part of Europe. So the demographic move is actually towards Remain.
And it's sure as we're discussing it.
You cannot argue that this is kind of... The Brexit majority is moving. Now, the polls are not picking up on this in any great numbers because they tend not to poll young people because they're the ones who don't vote.
Yeah. But the issue but for young people is not Brexit. It's about share the wealth. It's about for the many, not the few. It's about balancing the injustice of the parasite papers, that sort of nonsense that you see. A tiny elite gaining massively in wealth and everybody else being impoverished, disenfranchised in terms of their health and education system.
If the argument is that they're not going to have a full hard-on Brexit, then you're going to be annoying, discommoding, you're going to be irritating, you're going to be driving a majority mad. That doesn't stand up.
Why not?
If 19% of young extra voters are coming out on the basis of punishing the people who've brought about Brexit,
I haven't
heard from Niall just now.
Yeah, but to pick up on what Derek is saying, you can be as sure as we're sitting around this table here that the Labour Party in the UK are doing their focus groups, which is resonating exactly what Derek is saying, and that will be informing their positioning in the run into the next general election, which can happen anytime soon.
However, their leader Jeremy Corbyn is still anti-Europe.
Yeah, but he's a pragmatic politician at the end of the day, and
he's anti-Europe and anti-establishment.
If he wants to be in 10 Downing Street, he will take the
he'll sniff the wind and see what
the population are saying to him, particularly the younger people coming through. Like, if you go back to after the referendum,
why would he change course now when he fought the parliamentary party and the people elected him and kept him?
Because he'll have a very good reason, Cormac, when the exit package becomes known, when the negotiations are concluded and he is presented with this fait accompli, which ultimately they're going to be handed by the other side. That will really firm up his thinking. If you go back to, just to make this point, if you go back to just after the referendum, we had a number of engagements, the All-Ireland Civic Dialogue, and the resounding, and I attended the two of them, the first one, the resounding message which came from all the speakers, north and south, was that this will end up being a rerun and overturned by a second referendum, and I believe that will happen ultimately.
That's your belief. You believe it won't happen, Brexit. Is that right?
I argue that think Brexit in the plural, not the singular. There are many Brexits, not one. There's the one that Boris Johnson, the lady who's just been fired, Priti Patel wants, Liam Fox, others. John Redwood, you're very excited about John Redwood, who is not yesterday's man, but the day before yesterday's man. And that's a sort of total amputation. Then I think we've had the vote. I fully accept that. And I think you can say we can respect that vote, respect the mandate of the referendum by leaving the political EU so the House of Commons becomes utterly supreme and sovereign. Nobody can dictate its laws. But for heaven's sake, you're talking about England. 500 years we've been implicated, intricated, intermingled with the economy and the politics and the people of Europe, from Ireland right through to Poland.
Invading everywhere in the world.
We can live that. Indeed, in many other countries, as the Irish are,
Africa,
all over the world,
Asia,
thank goodness.
The Middle East,
so,
Ireland.
So the result of the result
of campaign for Brexit.
The result. Oh, did she?
Just
oh, well,
that
well, well,
well,
we did. We believe another Europe.
You keep that well below the radar when you're partaking in all these questions.
I believe another human race, another Catholic Church, another everything is possible. But in my book, I got very old. I now think better for my children's sake to work on creating something that works. And actually, I think the current European we have, warts and all the problems, and I've written books describing their problems, Rich, is better than the alternative of my youth of rival nation states. Now,
okay, hang on. Before you move on to the now part, let's read some of the texts we're getting. 51551 from people like Peter in Cork, who says, bring on a hard border, a hard Brexit. Why threaten the EU? Leave the cranky child sink or swim. Ireland will pull through, he says. Another texter says, in the event of a hard Brexit, Europe will expect Ireland to enforce the hard border to punish Britain. If we don't, will they send in Frontex? And a texter says, Frank Fian, you answer this. What do we do if Europe instructs us to put up a hard border?
Well, from the very beginning, the only border that can work is effectively a border in the Irish Sea. But the DUP will not go for that. But that is the only border that will work.
What happens if the DUP and the UK government reject that and the EU says, OK, if that's not part of the plan, we have to have a border as we did around the six
counties? Again, I said a border in the island of Ireland is the...
No, hang on. That's put out of the equation now. What happens if we are told by Brussels you must have a border?
I think we're in big trouble. We're in big trouble.
And what do we do?
Tell them to
apart,
go to hell.
Apart from being in big trouble, what do we do?
Well, you know, we're committed members of the EU, but we're in big trouble if that happens. And I've said that again. If
accept it, is that right?
No, we can't accept it.
What do we do then?
I would say it's far too early to say. We're still too close.
It hasn't been discussed?
Of course it's been discussed.
So what's the result of the discussion?
I'm not part of negotiations, but it is the doomsday reality for the island of Ireland.
What do we do?
I can't answer that either. I mean, that is ultimately a very... That's the question.
We're a year away from it, though.
What would you advocate, Niall?
When do you begin?
I would advocate keeping... obviously, maintaining the status quo in terms of no border. We don't want a hard border.
So we don't provide the border guards, the civil servants, the customs posts. We don't comply with any obligations
Your friends, the DUP campaign for Brexit. We're trying to arrive at a common sense solution here.
Hang on.
Been on the Falls Road and seen the Sinn Féin posters
protect,
all over the Andytown barracks
that
say people before property equals DUP.
Manufacturers who are exporting into the UK, we're dealing with the real issues, right? You're running around campaigning for Brexit.
Leo Varadkar said this in the Dáil, that we will not be implementing a hard border. He actually said it. And I think he stole the idea from us when we said, do not provide the border guards, the Guard Day or the Customs Guard.
It's not for me now to defend Leo Varadkar. But I don't think he'd steal any idea from you, Bridge.
I think our listener...
We'd enjoy a bit of a laugh.
He steals rhetoric. He doesn't implement the ideas, but he steals the...
I think our listener has exposed a huge weakness in the Irish Parliament and in the approach.
We are 12 months away. It's a fair question and it's a fair scenario posed by the texter. I don't know, because the European position is part of the collective, the remaining states. It's what's remaining in the EU, as you know, negotiating with the UK. So I don't know how they're going to iron out that.
We're two or three steps ahead of where we should be, which is Brexit is a proposal from the British to the rest of Europe.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't told us how this operates. All the position papers, none of them says out that what the British government keeps saying about a Northern Ireland border is there is a technological solution to this.
Yeah.
What it is, they never specify. How this works, they never specify. They say that they can be outside of the customs union, but there doesn't need to be a border.
That's in their court drivel, isn't it?
But first and foremost, it is up to them. It is up to the Brits to start moving on this.
Why would it be?
They're the ones who are choosing to leave. They're the ones who are saying to the rest of Europe, we want to leave the European Union.
We're the ones affected, Derek.
Of course we're the ones affected, but they're the ones who say that they want to leave. So they're the ones who want to change the situation. So it's up to them to put a proposal. Up to now, they haven't.
Derek,
so they haven't come to that.
The EU tell us we have to have a hard border.
No, this is the proposition we're discussing. But no, this is the way you cop out on it and the rest. Because you turn around. Yes, you do. Because you turn around and you say, hang a second. See, that we've always really been against the EU. So we're against the Brits on this one, because because they're not doing the right thing in the Brexit. But while, when we move around suddenly and we're now going to attack the EU, that doesn't have it hold
That's
up either.
I said. We just don't comply with their instruction to create
They're not
our
instructing
border.
Us to do anything.
We have been asked.
They're not instructing us to do anything.
The proposition has been put to the panel.
No, you frame it on the wrong basis. You frame it on this.
I didn't ask the question, he did.
No, but you're right, you've just asked me.
Let me pose the question again. Thanks, Paul.
Is our choice, if the EU instructs us, if we fail to come to an agreement or a compromise in the Brexit negotiations on the Irish border question, and Brussels says we need, under EU law, since they've left, to have a hard border or a border of some sort, do we suffer a hard border?
No.
Or do we flout European Union law?
No, the border goes down. The border goes down at British ports and airports. That's where the border lies. The border is in Britain. We're not, we'd say that there will not be a border
across the Isle of Ireland. The north is part of the UK jurisdiction.
But during World War II, they had that arrangement in place.
You better tell, Irene Foster, that Belfast Airport is an Irish airport, not a British one. She won't have a bar at that. I'll tell her.
But first of all, don't forget, what Britain is saying is that there will be no border patrols anyway. What they're actually saying in terms of their proposal is that when you go into the UK, if you come in as a third, Britain will then be a third country. If you come in from Europe, you will only actually be found out when you go to apply for support, when you go to sign on, when you go to look for social support, the rest of it. So they're not even talking about having a hard border there. But that is indicating how ludicrous their position is. So we're not even there at that point, yes. So I think the onus isn't on the Irish government, and you're not answering the if. I'm just
extremely worried at the look on Dennis McShane's face, because given the state of British discourse in terms of politics at the moment, you're looking very dismayed and very worried about our discourse here.
Simply because I agree with everybody, but it's surreal.
It's not going to happen.
Well, sorry, Irish family in big time. But if Britain fully leaves the customs union single market, there will have to be customs posts on a non-EU member state, i.e. the UK, including Northern Ireland, the six counties, and every EU country. Michel Barnier, the negotiator, told me he told the French government they have to set up massive new customs clearhouse warehouses on every French port that can take a ship from Britain. The idea Ireland could be excluded from this with, you know, an all-Ireland solution or no frontier checks is just, frankly, dear friends, surreal, which is why my appeal is for the Irish government, the Irish community in Britain, for Irish business who are doing nothing at all to explain to their colleagues in Britain that this is the biggest disaster in 80 years for the Irish Republic. And you have to change public opinion. A public opinion in Britain is malleable. You have to talk in a very friendly way, not in London, not delegations to the House of Commons, but to Bootle, to Bournemouth, to Birmingham, to Bradford, where ordinary British MPs are, and say to them, look, at the moment, by time, yes, I'll admit that, provisional solutions, transitional solutions, perhaps we have to leave the EU as a political organisation. We don't have to kill commerce and trade and free movement and the rest of it. And I wish Ireland would stop debating its fantasies about an all-Ireland border or the unity of Ireland or Arlene becoming a wonderful, passionate Irish nationalist and get real. Time is running out. Ireland is wasting time.
But it's not as simple as that, because I helped launch the Irish for Europe for the SDLP in the House of Commons a year and a half ago before Brexit. And we were anxious to get the Irish diaspora. And there's anecdotal evidence that the Irish diaspora, instead of voting, which was for us to remain, which was in our interest, that they voted to leave.
Because
they fell. They felt again, they voted not on referendums or people never vote on the question put them in referendums.
Yes, we know that.
They voted on immigration. And
we
it was as simple
that.
As that.
We know
and
that.
So it's very, very difficult. I think we did everything we could as it was a sovereign decision on behalf of the UK. But you're right. We need to try harder.
They even sent Enda Kenny to campaign in favour of a vote against Brexit.
That's where they went wrong.
Eleanor Dignam tweets to say, 1 minute he's telling us you're pregnant or you're not. Now he's saying there are many types of Brexit. Typical Blairite, says Alan. Joe in Sligo says, Cormac, please stop attacking Denis McShane. He has very valid points. Ooh. I don't believe I'm attacking Denis McShane.
Yes, you are.
Testing his logic, maybe. Labour says, Labour success in the last election came from Southern pro-Europe constituencies. Kevin says, wasn't it a silly thing for Britain to do? Let's have a referendum on Brexit. However, if you vote yes, we haven't a clue how it will be managed and what it will deliver. The Brexit deal should have been done before the vote. Talk about cart before the horse, says Kevin. Cullum says, Britain is negotiating for a friendly exit deal where they keep all the benefits of membership with none of the costs. But the EU is negotiating to make sure no other nation dares to leave the Union and therefore they have to minimise the benefits to Britain and maximise the costs. Those two aims are in direct conflict and little Ireland would be destroyed in the crossfire. Before I take a break, Niall Collins, if it is such a fraught issue, which it obviously is, the hard border question, and no solutions, realistic solutions being put forward, and the Taoiseach is telling the Dáil today that it's likely, in his belief, that European Union leaders will give the go-ahead for Brexit talks to move on from this, should we be a dissenting voice? Should Ireland say, let's not move on from this?
I don't know. Can you do that? Is it wise to do that? I don't know. I'm not obviously
Why
central.
Why couldn't we do that?
Because I think it's important that the remaining states that are staying in the European Union should be speaking at idem, at one voice, and shouldn't be seen to be divided or conquered.
Even if it hurts Ireland?
Well, look, I mean, let's see what happens.
If they all say one thing, we have to go along with
it. It's not the sequence of events, which is that Barnier comes and makes a recommendation and says to the council, here is what my view is and where we are. I don't believe we've made sufficient progress, a satisfactory progress on the first three items, one of which is Ireland. So it's the ball is in Barnier's court to a certain degree that he comes back to the European Council with his recommendation.
It's the leaders who make the decision.
Oh, no, it definitely is the leaders. The leaders have a say in it. That's what they mean. He's not good. He doesn't have the sole voice in this, but he will be listened to. What I think in that, but if he is going to come back, listen, there's progress made, that will have to be specified. There will have to be some clear basis in terms of, well, look, we've made progress, as in, here's what the cash settlement, the divorce settlement, if not the amount, the methodology for it, or how it's going to be calculated and how this figure will be arrived at. Number two is progress on EU citizenship rights for British citizens abroad and vice versa. And the third one, which is co-equal, it's exactly the same importance as the other two, which is the situation of Ireland. So I think, I mean, that Darnley has to be able to report progress. And he has terms of reference. So I don't think it's as simple as that. And I think the Taoiseach speculating about today doesn't help. It doesn't help the situation.
Okay, well,
the
we'll
talks
see.
Are due to start again tomorrow in Brussels. They haven't been going that well. There's 4 to 5 weeks to go. I don't think the Taoiseach saying, I think we'll be grand, I think we'll be okay. I don't think that's
okay. We'll see if we'll get more information on that tomorrow. After the break, we'll discuss the much calmer issue of water charges.
RTE Radio 1. Text Late Debate on 51551.
Brigade Fáilte and Asher, welcome back to the Late Debate. I'm joined by Niall Collins of Fianna Fáil, Breed Smith of Solidarity People Before Profit, Frank Fian of Fine Gael, Denis McShane is a former UK Labour Minister, and Derek Mooney is a public affairs consultant and former Fianna Fáil government advisor. Now let's discuss the Water Services Bill, which was passed today. Will this comply with the Water Framework Directive? And if it does not, are we to face fines? Is this water charges by the back door, Breed Smith?
I think it's water charges by the back door, the front door and the windows, because I think that is the construct of the Act is to allow for an excessive use charge, which is very ambiguous in its application, because it talks about the average household size, and the average household size has changed since the figures they used were 2014. And you have to go on the programmes about overcrowding and the knowledge all of us have about the level of overcrowding in homes now, because people cannot afford to move away from their parents, then the average size of a family is growing more than 2.4. And if that's what they're allowing for before they implement an excessive charge, then there are going to be charges.
How soon, in your opinion, could the excessive charge be hiked?
Well, they've said that they'll review it again in 12 months' time. They'll have a look at it again. But look, I'll tell you, the real thing here is that that bill that passed today would not have gone near Dáil Éireann, except for the People Power movement that hit the streets of this country for the 4 years that
we'll come to that in just a second.
It's very significant, though, Cormac. Every bill we deal with is the invent of one party or another, or a collective of parties. This bill came because of People Power and because of the participation of hundreds of thousands of ordinary people in shaping their lives and their own future.
You failed to a certain extent. This is a deal.
Did not fail. They got sold out by Fianna Fáil, by 11 years. But they did not fail.
You're right, Cormac. That's the hypocrisy out of breed. She's just dumped all over the bill.
I didn't dump all over the bill. I've criticised it. The bill wouldn't even be before the Dáil except for People Power.
Okay, the bill is before the Dáil because of Fianna Fáil.
Would you stop the reality of it now, please, Niall?
You cannot accept that we set out in our party manifesto our position in relation to water charges.
You've just insulted all of the population of Cumberland Valley, Fermanagh, and probably
Breed, you should just listen to the reality.
Give me a break.
We used the support that we got with the mandate that we accrued from the support we got to bring about the position where water charges have been effectively ended. And a small, very, very small minority of about 4% of households who use water excessively will pay a charge for the excessive use. And I think that is good value for the people who voted for Fianna Fáil based on what was in our manifesto. When it came to stepping up to the plate in terms of post the election, you and your party and others like Sinn Féin ran away. You didn't use your mandate, which you got, small and all that it is, to bring about and to effect change. So it was the Fianna Fáil party.
Can I ask you,
Niall?
Does this bill allow for the excessive use threshold to be lowered?
Pardon?
Does it allow for the excessive use threshold to be lowered in the future?
Basically, at the end of the day, about 4% of households who are adjudged to be using water excessively will be penalised or asked to pay.
The question is this: in the review in 12 months' time, that threshold could be lowered, and the 4% could shoot up to 20% or 30% or 40%. Isn't that right?
Correct.
Yeah. Well, I don't think we'd stand over that.
What would you do? Collapse the government?
We've set out our position. We've brought about this. We're happy with what we have today. And I think if there's a deviation from that, we would have a severe problem.
I'm very happy that we have this bill today. But I also think it's highly insulting of Fianna Fáil to claim credit for the fact that water charges was the main issue of the last election, and that water charges, as they were put on the agenda by Phil Hogan, were utterly defeated.
Everybody understands that your relevance is diminishing politically. We have used the votes that we got, the support that we got to bring about and to effect change. You didn't. And you're now trying to claim victory on the base of
what we and Fianna Fáil stood for.
The European Commission decides that this is actually against the European Framework Directive and that we face fines because water charges established the polluter pays principle in a different way. Now we're rowing back on that and we're facing fines. What do you say then?
Well, if the European Commission come and try to fine us for the outcome of what was, as I repeat, a People Power movement, not a Breedsmith movement or a Solidarity People Before Profit movement. And actually, Fianna Fáil started out on this campaign being in favour of water charges.
It must really upset you that Fianna Fáil has succeeded in effecting change.
Look, you're making British politics look good here.
As one woman in a room of five men, I think you should allow me a bit of space to speak now. Honestly,
this isn't a gender based debate.
He is bullying me. He's bullying me by speaking over me.
And this isn't a gender based debate.
Let me make one point.
Yeah.
Everybody is treated equally at this table.
No, they're not.
You get the same amount as everybody else. And I will not have the gender card thrown at me.
No.
I will not have that thrown at
me. You may not have the gender card thrown at you, but I'm telling you, I'm one woman in a room of five men, and every time I open my mouth, he talks me down, and you do not correct me.
You are one politician in my eyes. You are one politician in a room of politicians and commentators. Now, you can respond to him, but I will not have that card thrown at me.
Well, will you let me respond to him?
I will, I said so.
And will you ask him not to cut across me?
Yeah, absolutely, as I have done.
You haven't.
Same as you.
Sorry, Cormac, you haven't.
Please take your chance.
One simple
Please
point.
Take your
one
chance.
Simple, I'm taking
Please
my
take
chance.
Chance.
One simple point to you, Niall. And it's not about whether Fianna Fáil got this bill through or not. It's about your failure to acknowledge the role of hundreds of thousands of people in bringing water charters down.
We never
you
failed
have failed to acknowledge
That's not true.
You have
we,
said
we have
now.
Never,
Let
we
me
have
finish,
never
please.
Failed.
I said, hang on, please.
That's
you
not
have
even.
Just said okay. that Fianna Fáil brought this about. Not the hundreds of thousands of people who refused to pay, who marched, who got up early in the morning and blocked
meetings. Okay, no, we have your point.
You have answer taken
we brought
the credit.
It about in Parliament.
You
Can
have
you
taken
that
the credit for people.
No, hang on. You have your point. Answer that question.
Yeah, we brought it about in Parliament with the mandate that we received from the public. Can you explain that back
in answer to people power, though, isn't that right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. You finally acknowledge
it. I'm acknowledging
finally
it, of course. I never didn't acknowledge
finally
it.
Acknowledge.
Cormac, great to hear. Water charges checks will be posted soon. Do you reckon I'll get the €13,500 I paid for my well I got drilled and septic tank pipes, etc.? Or is it only the city dwellers and townies? Thanks. Can you ask Breed Smith, please, says Tommy Heatley. And an awful lot of people texting about when the checks will arrive.
What does he want to ask me?
Will he get money for... Wells drilled and septic tanks and so on. Or is this just for townies? That's his point.
Is it just for townies? I understand that everybody who paid water charges is getting something back.
Okay. Your opinion on this?
What I was about to, when you asked Breach earlier about this breach, the water directive, one of the best things that was done in this whole process was having an Oireachtas committee, was bringing people in. And one of the groups they brought in was from Scottish Water, who operates a relatively similar system. And that they've been, it's been up and running for a couple of years and they haven't been found to be in breach of the Water Directive, the Water Services Directive. So I think the evidence on this is more than likely not. Now, if the Commission finds separately, then it's found a new yardstick by which to do this. But I think in terms of trying to calm, which doesn't appear to have worked here, but in terms of trying to calm down the debate, one of the best things was to have this to an Oireachtas committee, was to look at best practice everywhere, was to bring in various experts, including Scottish Water and Welsh Water and one or two organisations from the UK, who turned around and said, look, this is the way we do it. We don't have to have surface. We don't have to have special water charges. We've rolled it in with other fees, etc., particularly in Scotland. And they have found to be in breach.
Okay.
And I think that gives us a positive.
Can I ask very, very finally, if you don't mind, it was Pádraig McLoughlin, the Sinn Féin senator, who criticised the Taoiseach today for wearing the shamrock poppy in the Dáil yesterday. You're wearing one right now, Frank Fian. What's your response to Pádraig McLoughlin?
I think it's about time we recognised the 50,000 Irish men from the island of Ireland, nationalists and unionists, who gave the great ultimate sacrifice from 1914 to 1918. They were completely airbrushed out of history. And I think in the last 10 years, we've become very confident, very mature to reflect that there's two sides to history.
He's saying it causes division.
The poppy, as far as I was concerned over the years, was the reserve of Ulster Unionism or Irish Unionism, the same as the tricolour and the lily was taken over by militant nationalism. And maybe it's now time for Middle Ireland to start going back and taking back the symbols.
But the Royal British Legion website says your poppy supports the armed forces community.
Absolutely, that is absolutely not true.
But that's what they say on the website.
No, it doesn't say it. The funds that go.
It does say it.
In the Irish, the funds that go to families and dependents of people, and it also goes
of what
to
people?
Of people who fought
in the war in Iraq, for example.
I don't believe that.
My uncle Neil died in the Arctic convoys to defeat fascism and to support a Europe that was free of fascism and in due course of communism. Now, he was, I'm not sure he was born in Ireland or Lanarkshire, from an Irish family on my mother's side, but he died, he sacrificed his life for something called freedom. Not wearing a red poppy, maybe that is a symbol simply of English or British memory. I think the idea of combining it with an Irish shamrock is noble, and I think all of my family in Scotland, Irish family, will be delighted that they could do that without any sense. If it could be arrived at, I'm appalled that there are cheap politics from anybody here in Ireland about that.
Hang on, the question is, and I have an obligation to ask the question, is it correct when the British Royal British Legion website says your poppy supports the armed forces community past and present? Is that your understanding of it? Yeah.
Cheers.
So does that?
But I think it supports the families. I think you're looking at this.
I think the site says that the monies are spent in Ireland. I think that's a difference. It should be borne in mind that we have our own veterans organisations. We have two of them: we have IONVA, which is the Irish United Nations Veterans Association, and ONE, the Organisation of National Lake Servicemen. The ONE has a fundraising through the Fuchsia. So I mean there is a great deal of work needs to be done for former members of the Defence Forces and even current members of the Defence Forces. So that there's I have no great objection to the poppy. I personally wouldn't wear one because I just think the poppy has had a symbolism over most of my teens.
I have one objection, one small objection to this whole discourse, and that is that the 50,000 Irish men made a great sacrifice. They were lambs to the slaughter. They were cannon fodder. They were mainly poor working class men, Dublin's broken union men from the lockout included, who were forced onto the fields of Somme with no idea what was coming down the tracks. They didn't go out making a noble sacrifice. They were used as cannon fodder.
I don't think my uncle actually went and risked his life and Edley died to defeat fascism.
In what year?
In 1942.
My thanks to Niall Collins, Breed Smith, Frank Fee, and Dennis McShane, Derek Mooney, Angus Muicha Session Wedden, Kieran O'Byrne, A.B. Philbin Bowman, Richie McCulloch, and David Phelan. Now, a little bit late, I'm sorry. Late date with Cathal Murray.